Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest, returning guest, is Paul Selig, and today we're going to be talking about his newest book, Beyond the Known, Realization, a Channeled Text. And this is the first in a trilogy, the Beyond the Known trilogy. In 1987, a spiritual experience left Paul Selig clairvoyant. Since then, Paul has established himself as one of the foremost spiritual channels in the world. His unique connection has placed him in contact with the guides, beings of higher intelligence, who share their voices and wisdom through him. Expanding on and transcending his previous work, Realization is the first volume in the Beyond the Known trilogy and is composed of pure, unedited words of the guides as they share their wisdom and knowledge through Paul. It serves a psychological, spiritual guide to take readers beyond the perceived limitations of accepted reality and open their minds to ultimate manifestation. For more information, you can visit Paul's website, which is paulselig.com, and that's paulselig.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Paul to the show. Good day, sir.
Good day. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. And boy, I'll tell you, your guides are really pumping these out for you. I mean, it was 9 months ago that we were talked about Book of Freedom, and this is following up right close behind. So, yeah. I guess the first thing to start with, and now many of my listeners, will have known of your background, but there may be, since 9 months ago, new people listening. So would you mind sharing a little bit about, the guides and how this, the information for these books comes to you?
Well, I'm a channel, so I'm taking dictation. It's a form of clairaudience or mediumship. I sit in a chair, I close my eyes, I'll hear one phrase that sort of blocks out everything else that's going on in my mind. And as I give voice to that one phrase, all of the other language piles out on top of it. These are all done now in front of audiences. The last three books, I think, were done before, students. The recordings are then transcribed, and the transcriptions are the book, so they are unedited. The unedited teachings are the lectures that are delivered before the students. I began opening up psychically when I was 25, and it was a small beginning, and then my clairaudience kicked in my early 30s when I was studying a form of energy healing. And I found that if I had my hands on people's bodies, I could hear things for them. So what I do is I hear and I give voice to what I hear. I'm a bit like a radio. And when I'm channeling, I'm taking messages or teachings, from these guides that I work with. The only reason they're called the guides is my ex, when my ex found out I could do this, used to say, ask the guides this, ask the guides that. So it's a convenient name, not of any import. But this is what I do now. I was a college teacher for many, many years and doing this work very quietly, and now it's what I do. And as you said, the guides are prolific, and they've dictated, I think, this was the seventh book that just came out, the eighth they completed already, so, and there'll be a ninth if they finish the trilogy. So, nine books in 10 years is what we're looking at. So it's quite a pace that they're keeping up through me.
they certainly are. And I mean, it's good to be able to have that source of material. I mean, to be able to draw from. Now, have they ever said to you, who they are or some kind of identification in a way of themselves?
Well, in the first book they call themselves, teachers, ascended masters. The name that they've used with some consistency since I first began hearing is the name Melchizedek, which is a priesthood. I've also heard them say, we are who you become when you know who you are, you know, or they've spoken as the Christ consciousness. So, you know, I'm not so caught up in the names. The Melchizedek mm-hmm. is the name that they've announced in the books, and I live with that with some discomfort, only because I find that there can be a lot of sort of attachment to names, an egoic attachment, and to hierarchy and meanings that, you know, can get overly laden with narrative. And I don't know that the guides care what we call them, but it was in the third book they said, maybe the fourth book they said, if you wish to call us something, you may call us Melchizedek. And they've been consistent with that. And that's the name that I heard years before. So it wasn't a surprise to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, in one sense, I can understand the benefit of not having a name, mm-hmm. you know, because of just because of all the stuff that can come along with, you know, naming things or identifying or, you know, boxing in things. But in a way, it's also, I think, just fascinating that, you know, to be able to just get a sense of, you know, kind of where they're coming from in a way. But mm-hmm. but if they are who we would hope to achieve, then, you know, that's saying a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So now, this particular series, the Beyond the Known mm-hmm. series, how is it differing from the Mastery series?
Well, I'm now of the opinion that the guides have been preparing their students for this trilogy through the two that preceded it. The very first book, I Am the Word, really seems to hold the DNA of the books to follow. It's sort of the template. And then they're really unpacking that teaching and upstepping the energetic attunements that they bring through in each book as they continue. At the end of the Mastery series, which was the second trilogy, the guides invite everybody, you know, across a threshold into this new life. And there was great excitement there, and, you know, they even told me that I could come too, which was quite nice. I got to cross the threshold with everybody else. And then I was channeling at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California, right after the Book of Freedom was completed, and the guides brought everybody to this place they called the Upper Room, and they've done that in pretty much every workshop I've done ever since. And Beyond the Known, the trilogy, is the teaching of the Upper Room. It's the teaching of operating at the octave above the one that we're used to. They say that our reality is an octave of expression. It's in tone. And, you know, it's got high notes and low notes, and we're all in agreement to this reality, and we're all in vibration at this level. And what they say that they're doing is they're lifting us to the octave above. And the octave above is the upper room, or they call it the kingdom sometimes too. And they say that the kingdom is the awareness of the divine in all manifestation. So in the very first book, they bring us all up there and they introduce it and, you know, begin to teach us how to work there. In the book that they've since channeled, they really talk about the transition that's required for one to begin to embody there, which really is a release of the mask of the small self who we've been taught to be, who we think we are, to begin to operate in this higher frequency. So I don't know what the next book is, truthfully, after that, because they haven't delivered it yet, and I only know what they're going to be once they start talking in front of the students and say, and this is in the book, and this is the foreword to the next book, and, you know, and that's how it happens. So that's what I can say about it as best I understand. But the prior books really were introducing us to the concept of the divine self, the sort of a guidebook. The second book was a bit of a guidebook to begin to operate from that place. The third book was really addressing our innate worthiness of claiming our inheritance, which is the divine self and manifestation. And then mastery, truth, and freedom are all preparing to lift us up to this level of agreement to, they say, what exists beyond the known, what's already here and coexists with us that we have been in denial of. The guides say again and again, the only real problem humanity has is the denial of the divine. That's it. Everything can be traced back to that.
So the upper room is that octave where the connection to the divine is known?
It's where embodiment occurs. That's how I understand it. So we've been operating in this inherited belief that if there is a God or something like a God or spirit or whatever you want to call it, it's up there in the clouds and we're stuck here in the mud. And here we will stay. And it's only when we get to drop dead that we get to have this other experience of the presence of the divine. And the guides say our denial of the inherent divine in the form that we've taken in physical reality is party to this belief that we're separate. So they're reclaiming the divine as form, the divine as the body, the divine as the sky, the divine as the mud and the sky. Everything is of God. They shift us in vibration through these books to acclimate to a higher level of vibrational accord. And I've always said ACCORD or ACHORD as on a piano. The chord of the true self in vibration and tone expresses in the upper room. They say as you begin to align at that level, the broadcast of your energetic field has shifted because it's acclimated to the higher. And from that perspective, you're actually lifting what you encounter to the upper room, again, by entrainment or vibrational accord. So the upper room is Christ mind. And this is as best I understand it still, and I'm not the best student of the work. I'm doing my best to keep up with it all. But they say it's the level that we can incarnate or embody as the divine self while maintaining form. That there are other, degrees, certainly, where the body is not necessary, but we're in a body. We're having experience here of a physical reality. But they say that the music that we are, the notes that we're playing in our field, are altered. They talk about everything, every piece of music, they say, can be played in multiple octaves. And, we're used to playing our expression here. And what they're doing is they're transposing the beings that we are, the field that we are, to an alignment to the inherent divine that they say must exist as all things. You can't have God just in some places. So if God is in the sky, it's also in your spleen. And in your, in your back and in, your freckles. The freckles are the one next to you that you can't stand. So the realization of the inherent divine seems to be what is lifting us. So that we begin to operate at a level of agreement, which is again vibrational accord, where we're witnessing the inherent divine that must be there and has been precluded or denied through this belief in separation that we've all been in agreement to.
Yeah. So when we, once we experience the upper room, that particular vibration, or is it a case that like once you're there, or is it something that you constantly have, not constantly, but it's a state of being that isn't that may not be necessarily consistent to start with, but something to work at.
This is how I understand it. Because it's the second, truthfully. It's not that you arrive there and you're done. I don't get that at all. You arrive there, and then everything that you're dealing with that would preclude your experience of the upper room comes up to be addressed. So the example that I've been given is, so say you're living on the fifth floor of a building and you are given a new apartment on the 10th floor and all your stuff is on the fifth floor and you go up to this empty apartment, you immediately want to bring all the crap from the old up to the new. but it doesn't live there. You can't take it there. So what we end up doing is we end up retreating to the familiar, you know, to the old angers, the old slights, the old fears, because we've known ourselves through them. We believe those things to be who we are. Now, when the guides teach, and I, you know, I'm usually, you know, channeling publicly about half the month somewhere at this point, the guides bring everybody to the upper room, and it's a very tangible experience of energy. You can feel the energy in the room shift immediately, and people can feel it in their energetic fields, even people that aren't used to feeling energy or having these experiences. But once you know it's there, you've been attuned to it. You know, once you've been attuned to it, it's there. So imagine you're a radio, and you're used to playing the same old stations all the time, and then somebody says, here's a much higher station, and you can play this, and you're the radio that will play this. Here's how you can play this station. They can teach us how to do that, but we're the ones that have to maintain the alignment to be able to support that expression. So if you want to go back and play the old stations, you can. It just gets really uncomfortable at a certain point once you've had these experiences of the other.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, how does the that connection, how does it manifest? What, I mean, what are some of examples of, you know, someone's experience in a lower room, you know, versus the upper room, you know, just to give the listeners an idea of, for their personal experience, what would be different?
Sure. I mean, you see, the guides say the upper room is the eternal now. So you're expressing in the eternal now. You're not operating in this sort of presupposition of what was and what should be, which are both just ideas. History is an idea. The future is an idea. But when you're aligned in the upper room, if I understand what they're teaching, you're operating in what they call the eternal now. You're also not operating at a level of fear. The guides say fear doesn't exist in the upper room, so you've lifted beyond fear. If you want to go back to fear, you can have it, but it's a choice. So, you know, you can go back downstairs anytime you want to. Nobody's chaining you to the radiator in the upper room. We have free will. But in the upper room, the experience is of fearlessness, being without fear, and also, I have to say, knowing. Your inherent knowing is in the upper room. You know, it's the true self as you, they say, that knows, capital K knows. And they say the true self knows and the small self thinks. And so when you're operating at the other level, you're operating from a place of knowing in the present, and you're not operating from fear. And the guides have said, you know, the action of fear is to claim more fear. And every choice we make in fear ends up getting us more of the same. So our lives then, I would hope, begin to reflect that in some way. I mean, that's just the beginning of it as far as I understand it. There's a lot more, but that's a way to introduce the concept.
Well, that's good. You know, and unfortunately, fear is a good measure because I think, you know, there is, you know, in today's world, there's a preponderance of fear being promoted, and it becomes harder, you know, not, I wouldn't say harder, but I mean it provides a lot more opportunity for being able to choose fear or not.
Well, but you know, the guides have said this is the last hurrah for fear. I hope that they're right, you know, but we're being invited to be frightened of everyone and everything. And, you know, I don't think it really works finally, you know, I mean, I'm a New Yorker. I think you may be too. But I was here, you know, during, you know, 9/11 and then the months that followed, there were red alerts and yellow alerts every day. And we all watched them intently for the first couple of months. Then we all got sick of them. We started taking the subways again. You know, we started going back to, you know, the public places. So, you know, we stopped agreeing to fear and it stopped being our reality. So yes, the opportunities are there, and you know, we're being invited to make choices based on that fear. And I suspect if we do that individually or collectively, we'll find ourselves in greater fear, you know, and I hope that's not the case, but that seems to be, you know, one of the options available to us. I mean, the guides say things like, you know, the fact that you all can, you know, build a bomb to keep you safe is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. You know, bombs are meant to go off. They're not used to protect yourselves. So, you know, this is the consciousness that we've been operating from. Let's build a bigger bomb. Let's get more guns. Let's do these things. And, you know, what it gets us is, you know, more violence and more of what we've had, as far as I can tell. And so what the guides have talked about is lifting to a level of consciousness, which is the upper room, where war is not possible. The construct of war, which is fear-based, it's either about greed, which is a form of fear, or controlling others, which is fear, defending property, fear, you know, all of these things. You know, when we're not operating from that basis, we can have a very different reality, but we've known ourselves for so very long through fear. I mean, ever since the beginning of time, there's been a war, as far as I can tell. So we expect it. We're going to get what we've always had. In the upper room, in what they call the eternal now, we're operating without the mandate of history to tell us what we should do. We have access to our own knowing in a different way. And that's the gift, I think, of these teachings, is we have a whole other option available to us beyond what we've been taught to expect or believe.
Yeah, it would be. And, you know, to be free of history, you know, and then certainly choosing, making decisions based in the now would be a lot more accurate, or seems to be more freeing in a way, you know, than having that baggage of history, but also living in the now, also the fear of future, you know. I mean, it seems that you know, that is placed just as much a part into it as the past.
Well, the guides say that the small self, which is the personality structure, knows itself through history and seeks to replicate history as a result of that. So the person who was raised to believe that they're a piece of crap and identifies as a piece of crap looks for evidence of being a piece of crap in the future. And we end up perpetuating these ideas about ourselves, which are not true. And the guides say the truth of who you are, who anybody is the divine self. And it's a hard concept to grasp for me some days. You know, I still have a lot of fear, and I worry all the time about things that may never happen. You know, that's how I was hardwired. But what I do when I do that is I sacrifice the availability of God, which is present always. But if I'm looking at the fear and I'm aligning to the fear and the potential for doom and disaster, I'm denying the presence of the inherent divine. It doesn't mean that if there's a storm coming, you don't put up the storm windows. There's prudence.
Right.
This isn't a teaching about being foolhardy. It is the difference of saying, I'm never going to go on a vacation to an island because it may get hit by a hurricane. You know, and I'm going to stay in my house, you know, which is, you know, an act of fear, to be frightened of the world. So what they're teaching us, I hope, is that the realization of the divine in all things, God as the lamppost, God as the one opposite you, God as the one, you know, you used to know and the one that you will meet tomorrow, all of these things, the ever-present divine, in that awareness, we're not operating from fear. We're operating in tandem with a higher level of agreement than fear could ever know. And therein lies a potential for a whole other experience of reality than we've been attuned to thus far.
Yeah. Well, I would say, you know, in one way it's good, not good. It's interesting to know that you still, you have had these teachings, you know, for years, and I've gotten that, and like you say, you're also a student of them as well, you know, and that you experience fear too, even knowing what, you know, they say about fear. So, you know, for the listeners out there, I think it's good to recognize that, you know, we're still human, and then we're still going to kind of reflect some of the... Go ahead.
No, that's all. It's an opportunity. You know, I'm not a spiritual teacher. I'm not a guru. I'm a channeler. I sit in a chair and I take dictation, and I'm often confounded by what I hear. But what comes through me has been coming through me with enormous insistence and tremendous consistency for years now, you know. I mean, I don't know. Whenever I start to question this whole phenomena, which I do sometimes, like this is just too nuts for me, you know, I go, I don't care how, you know, articulate I might be. I don't think I'm capable of closing my eyes and dictating now 8 entire books that require no editing. You know, or just spoken and then transcribed by somebody else. I mean, it's crazy to think about, but that's really what happens. And that is this experience. And so I'm having a hard enough time just catching up with the fact that this is what my life has become, you know, then, you know, and trying to attend to the teachings as best I can. But, you know, I read today, you know, something about, you know, I know we all have our places of wounding, you know, and I think some of the opportunity with these books and these teachings is indeed to address that. But you don't address those things by pretending they're not there. It's that phrase we hear bandied about, spiritual bypassing. And, you know, it's not about pretending that you're not frightened or you weren't hurt or something catalyzed your fear. It becomes the opportunity, perhaps, to work with the divine in some way, to align to it, to the level where you're no longer subjected or have not made a god or a totem out of the fear, you know, which is what we do, you know. You know, the diagnosis is greater than God. You know, I made the marriage greater than God. The job is more important, you know. It's again, what the guys say, the denial of the divine is the only real problem. That's what I get.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, we're about halfway through the show, Paul, so I want to take just a quick break and do want to invite listeners, if you'd like to ask any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to post them there. And then when we come back from commercial, Paul, you have an entire chapter in your realization book about re-articulation. So I'd kind of like to talk about that when we come back, okay?
Okay.
Great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break. Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,400 shows we have had over the past 9 years. Also on the site is a link to the products and services we provide, books, photography, a wellness store, and self-publishing assistance. Our show is a free podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can subscribe for free on any of those platforms by using the links on our website homepage. We are on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms at the top of our homepage. Our website, biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us. Again, today my special guest is Paul Selig, and we're talking about his newest book, Beyond the Known, Realization, a Channeled Text. And again, this book is the first in the trilogy, the Beyond the Known trilogy. You can find out more, again, by visiting Paul's website, which is paulselig.com. That's PAULSELIG.com. Okay, with that, we're back, Paul. Okay, so re-articulation. So can we talk a little bit about what that is and what does it affect?
I'll do my best. I mean, you know, I'm, you know, I've channeled a whole other book on top of the book that just came out. So I'm, you know, my references are all over the place. And I may get this wrong. although the guides may pipe in and correct me, and if that happens, forgive me. It just happens sometimes. But my understanding is that everything is an articulation. Everything is of source, one source. So one of the metaphors the guides use is a painting. There's one paint that is colored with different pigments, and that paint is applied to a canvas. And what it outpictures, what it depicts, for example, they use the example, I think, of a beach scene where there's a ship in a storm on the horizon and people, you know, lying in the sun on the beach and perhaps a body that's washed up on another part of the shore. We attach meaning to all of those things and values and create narratives to them, but frankly, it's all the paint. It's just the paint. It's just God. If God is the paint, it's just God. God as God rendered as the ship and the storm and the body washed up and the sunbathers. So we are all, they would say, I think, in articulation now. Rearticulation is the I'm going to go to the guides. Rearticulation is the realization of the divine self, of the divine self, or the monad expressed as Hudotor, expressed as who and what you are in manifestation, rearticulation, the resurrection, if you wish, of the divine self, expressing as who and what you are for the benefit of the world. That is rearticulation. That is rearticulation now. Yes, you are in articulation now. Yes, through the landscape. As you lift to the higher octave, the upper room, if you prefer, how you express mandates that the scenario, the expression of your being in consort with reality, shifts to meet you. You become the transformer of reality in a rearticulated state, period. And I hear period. So that's the guides. I whisper and repeat when that stuff happens.
Yeah.
Sounds that
way. Yeah. And it's, and it was a great visual to kind of keep in mind as they were going through the explanation. It sounds like, using the analogy of the paint and what goes, it seems like it's kind of like the paint is still wet in a way, and then we are changing the scene.
Mm-hmm. It's malleable to consciousness. They say how we perceive anything and how we hold that perception, what we claim it as, informs the object. So the guides say you can't make the rock holy. You can pick up a rock and call it a rock, but you can't make the rock holy, but you can deny its inherent divinity. Your realization of the rock as of source, as of God, they say actually lifts the rock in vibration to its true nature. And this is done again through vibrational accord. The one who's denying the divine in himself must by nature then deny the divine in all that he or she sees, because it can't be any other way. I mean, the guides say what you put in darkness calls you to that darkness. What you bless blesses you in return. What you curse curses you back. It's really simple stuff. So the one who realizes who he or she is also realizes what is before her as of the divine. They say, God sees God in everything. And so that's the shift in reality. And they're actually talking about this now as phenomena, as physical manifestation. There's a teaching in the Book of Freedom, and I believe it returns in depth in the texts that follow, where they talk about something called the echo. And they do this in the workshops. It's pretty astonishing. But they have people, say, stand 5 feet apart from each other in teams, and you're claiming the inherent divine in the form of the one before you, with the claim that they make, which is part of an attunement. I know what you are in truth, and the what is form, manifestation, the substance of it. And you can literally feel the energy from the person you're claiming that for respond to you. It comes almost in like radio waves, sonar. I mean, it's fascinating. These waves of energy return. And so they're talking about how reality is transformed through this level of alignment. You know, they say how you hold anything in consciousness informs it. And I asked them when they first brought that through, the example was, well, so if that means that there's a book on a table in Paris, my consciousness is informing the book. And the guy said, the moment you know that there's a book on the table in Paris, yes, your consciousness informs the object, how you hold it, claims it in a certain way. And what we're doing is claiming everything we see with all of this inherited baggage from thousands of years of perhaps false understanding and perhaps misguided, you know, morality. You know, what's good in this country may be celebrated in another. It's fairly subjective. You know, I mean, what's good may be called evil elsewhere. You know, where we're doing this all the time at the cost of perhaps re-knowing what is before us without the baggage that's become attached to it. So, you know, they talk a lot about this, you know, and when it first started coming through in the second series of books, when they first started talking about sort of deconstructing reality, I was very challenged by it, and I was also kind of bored. I thought, well, what does it mean? You know, I get it, the table used to be a tree, and the tree used to be a seed. And the guy said, everything you see will one day be re-known in some other form. You know, and what they're talking about now is the malleability or elasticity of manifestation when things are lifted to a higher octave. You know, when you lift something, you're lifting it from its density to a more malleable state of agreement. And they say, you know, this is how the world is transformed through you know, the renewing of our realization of the inherent divine that must be there. They say it often in the book, behold, I make all things new. I mean, that is the teaching.
Yeah. So with the, now, when we're experiencing that connection to divinity, is this something that that radiates outward, you know, to others so that they may get a glimpse of it if they're haven't before?
It's palpable, yeah. I mean, the claim that they speak of in the book Beyond My Own Realization is the claim, I have come, which is the claim of embodiment. The prior claims that the guides have worked with, and the claims are all energetic attunements, they can be felt when they're worked with, and if you come to a group, you can all feel them in a group or a live stream, the energy is present. But the guides, you know, began with, I know who I am in truth, I know what I am in truth, I know how I serve in truth, I am free, I am free, I am free. The guides have said that all of those claims are as notes on a piano keyboard, and that when all of those notes are played simultaneously in realization, which means not just the parroting of the words, but the true knowing of them, I know who I am as of God or the divine self. I know what I am, the manifestation of it. I know how I serve, which means how I am expressed as it. I am free, I am free, I am free, which aligns you to what exists beyond the known, beyond the prescribed reality. When those notes are played in unison, they say that the claim it makes is, I have come, I have come, I have come, which is manifestation, which is the divine in form as who and what you are. That's how I get it. And it does have impact. It does have radiance.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it seems that, you know, that would lend import to what we do as individuals to recognize that it, you know, it's not just for us. It's really for all humanity.
Yes, actually, yes. It's not a selfish teaching. It's not a convenient teaching either. So it's not a book I would recommend everybody go out and buy if they want to get a date. You know, it hasn't worked for me that way. But if you want to begin to have a higher experience of yourself, it probably is going to shake up your world a little bit.
Well, yeah, you know, it's one of those cases. You know, as I've gone through and read your books, I mean, for me, the biggest impact is usually just to shake me out of my preconceived ideas.
Yeah.
You know, kind of open me up, you know, and that's a good thing. You know, books that can do that are great. Now, one of the things I noticed, too, is that, you know, the the three repeat, you know, the repetitiveness.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, beyond the idea that you've got now, you know, this is going to be the third trilogy, have you kind of gotten an idea of why three times?
No, I mean, I have a friend who's an old-time medium who explained to me it's once for, you know, once for the body, once for the mind, once for the spirit. It's all being included and at that level of hearing. But I don't know that that's the case. I think they actually talk about it in one of the books, but I don't remember what they said. And I know people have asked it before and they've answered it. But that's my convenient memory of it.
Okay, well, that's good, you know, because it's, you know, the one thing that I have found is that as I've gone through and read the passages, whenever that happens, to me, it just seems to firm up what the idea is trying to be communicated.
Yeah. Well, they're not shy on repetition, I will say that for them, but it's usually for a reason, you know. I mean, they're going deeper and deeper and deeper into these concepts. I mean, they're not beach books, you know, they're not page turners. People often find that, you know, well, the books themselves, you know, the guides say are energetic transmissions that work directly with the reader. So people are having experiences of the energy as they're reading the books, which is great because then they don't need me, you know, which is as it should be. You know, it should be your own experience with this stuff.
The direct connection. Yeah, exactly. I agree. Yeah, I agree. So what have you kind of gotten? Now, you said that this book is done, obviously, then the next number eight is completed.
In the can.
So,
it's ready, yes.
Yeah, in the can. So what is the, if there is a message, for of this trilogy, the idea of Beyond the Known?
I don't know where it goes after the second book. I really don't.
Okay.
I won't know until they're there, you know.
Okay.
The second book is called Alchemy. It'll be out in August 2003. And that's where they really begin addressing the rearticulation of matter. But they also, there's a lot of talk in this book about relationships, more so than I think any other book, and how we operate, you know, in consort with others through expectation. So it's different. It was a very challenging book to bring through because I was getting the examples of the teachings in my own life on a pretty much a daily basis, and none of it was comfortable. So I don't know where they'll take us after that. I mean, the transit in the last book, one of the illustrations that was used was it was as if you're going from one continent to another. And the passage from one to the other may involve some stormy seas. But once you're on the other shore, you're on the other shore. And my hope is that the third book of this trilogy will be about the other shore, but I don't know. You know, for all I know, they'll, you know, surprise us with something very different.
So right now that is literally beyond the known for you. What number three?
Really so. Yeah.
Well, Paul, this has really been a joy speaking with you again. I always enjoy your books. They're very thought provoking and get me thinking. So any maybe final words for listeners before we close?
I don't have any, truthfully.
Okay.
You know, I'm just happy if people get something out of them, truthfully.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Paul Selig. We've been talking about his newest book, Beyond the Known, Realization, a Channeled Text. It is, again, the first in the next trilogy, the Beyond the Known trilogy. And again, you can find out more by visiting Paul's website, which is paulselig.com. And on his website, you can find a plethora of information, not only about his media appearances, but also workshops, live streams, videos, audiobooks, just a whole bunch of stuff. So definitely go there and check it out. Again, it's paulselig.com, paulselig.com. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Remember, our show is available as a free podcast from Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. To follow our show, visit our homepage at byteradio.me and select the platform you use most. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ByteRadioMe. Until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.